Everybody have a copy of the handout and stuff. That's what I'll walk through like usual. It's a pleasure to have you here, and I'll give you my comments on the fiscal year 2009 budget. First, we'll take a look at the numbers, like usual, focusing on some of the key measures. Then I'll take a quick glance at fiscal year 2010. What does the following year actually look like? We'll review expenditure shifts and some of the comparison problems that they create when we do expenditure shifts. I'll talk to you a little bit about the Senior Living Trust story, a story I think you need to know about. And we'll look at Iowa's new charge card, where we're shifting some costs to this year that we hadn't previously. And then I'll conclude with just some brief comments about fiscal conservatism during a downturn in the economy. So if you take a look at slide number 3, it lays out the numbers. If you look at the bottom in the center, you'll see that expenditure growth in fiscal year 2009 is about $297 million, or 4.7%. And I think the real key is if you look at a two-year period, you'll see up on the top half of the graph that revenues grew from $5,722,000,000 to $6,281,000,000, or about a $558 million increase in revenues. So that's 9.8% over a two-year period, so almost 10%, or almost an average 5% annual increase. Expenditures, on the other hand, grew from $5,739,000,000 to $6,588,000,000. And that's about an $849 million growth, or about 14.8%. The real key here is that our expenditure growth continues to significantly outpace our revenue growth. In fact, if you take a look at it, for every dollar of revenue growth, spending grew by $1.52. So we further compound our mismatch that Iowa's facing between revenues and expenditures. In slide 4, you'll see my analysis of the spending gap that we've talked a lot about. This is to the extent that our actual general fund services cost more than what our general fund revenue stream actually provides. As you remember from past years, what I'm really looking for and asking for is improvement. Let's take some steps in the right direction. And if you take a look at this, you'll see fiscal year 2008 budget, $365 million spending gap. This year, $370 million spending gap. So really no improvement, and that's what I've been looking at over the last several years. We don't seem to be making any strides. And especially if you take a look, we had a 10% almost revenue growth over a two-year period. So with 5% revenue growth, what's it really going to take to start reducing the spending gap and bringing our expenditures and revenues in line with each other? Slide 5, you'll see my quick look at fiscal year 2010. One way for me to really take a look at a budget proposal is to say, let me evaluate this budget proposal by also saying, how does it set me up for the following year? If you take a look here, you'll see that revenues actually start in fiscal year 2009 at $6,281,000,000. Now, there's already some legislation in place that reduces certain revenue streams and provides increased tax credits, and that's estimated to be about $87 million. So fiscal year 09 revenues going into fiscal year 2010 are $6,194,000,000. Now, because of the 99% spending limitation, if you apply that, that means we have $6,132,000,000 worth of revenues going into fiscal year 2010 that we could spend. You'll see following that, fiscal year 2009, true total expenditures are already $6,588,000,000. And in the last session, they approved an increase, 4% allowable growth for education, so that adds another $112 million. So our ongoing spending into fiscal year 2010 would be $6,701 million. Now that assumes all costs stay at the same level as fiscal year 2009, except for that additional education amount. What that tells us is that we've already got a built-in spending gap of $569 million going into fiscal year 2010. In other words, to fully fund all of our general fund costs out of general fund revenues, revenues would have to grow 9.3% just to keep our costs at the same level as fiscal year 09. Just told you that in the last two-year period, revenues only grew 9.8%. So it's very unlikely that we're going to get one-year revenue growth of almost that amount. Plus, these are much more shaky in economic times than what the last couple have been. So following that, you'll see a chart that shows you expenditure shifts. These are the charge cards that we continually use. Because our appetite to spend is greater than the revenue stream that we have, we continually rely on other funds and special accounts to actually pay for some of our general fund services. What you'll see there is that we're at a record level in fiscal year 2009 budget. $443 million are being shifted to other funds and special accounts. I find that extremely interesting because if you look back in the earlier years, Remember, we had the 9/11 tragic event, and that really occurred during the fiscal year 2002. And if you look at fiscal year 2002 and 2003, we were at $265 million and $360 million worth of shifted costs. Yet in more recent years, where we actually have revenue growth, we're almost, 50% higher than what some of those shifts are. So it just doesn't seem to make sense that we continue to shift costs to these other funds and special accounts, because our appetite to spend is much greater than our appetite to increase the taxes and fee side of things to match it. On slide 7, what do all those expenditure shifts create? They create a lot of confusion if you try and compare numbers. In fact, if you take just what the taxpayers are told to take a look at the general fund budget, I tell people it's like looking at your checking account only and ignoring your charge card spending. So if you take a look there at the top half of the graph, you'll see the governor's proposal was $6,399,000,000, whereas the adopted budget was $6,133,000,000. So if you took just the general fund checking account only analysis, you would think spending went down by $266 million in the final budget versus the governor's proposal, or almost 4.2%. And I think it was referred to as legislature slashes spending. However, when you put everything on an apples-to-apples comparison and you look at both our checking account and our charge card spending, that's where you find the real number stepping forward. And when you do that, you see spending in this budget only declined $25 million from what the governor had proposed, so barely measurable, let alone slashed spending compared to the governor's. Slide 8 just shows you what some of the consequences of our year after year of expenditure shifts are doing. A lot of those funds are starting to be depleted. In other words, our charge cards are starting to be maxed out. Senior Living Trust Fund, the next slide, I'll talk a little bit about that fund. A lot of the tobacco settlement-related funds are being depleted. Property Tax Credit Fund is the carryover of the surplus from one year to the next. In fact, if you look at the resources used in the fiscal year 2009 budget, there's $225 million worth of resources that we're spending that won't be there in 2010. So it tells you that Iowa has got to do something to get our revenues and expenditures back in line. On slide 9, one fund that's constantly tapped over recent years has been the Senior Living Trust Fund. And I think it's so important that people understand what's happening with that fund. When I first started to make citizens aware of the fact that the Senior Living Trust Fund was being tapped, seniors started to talk to their elected officials and said, we really don't appreciate that. So elected officials responded and said, we're going to repay $300 million of the almost $600 million that we diverted out of that fund. So in other words, 50 cents on the dollar we're going to put back in there. The key is right now everybody's talking about what we're putting back into that fund. If you look at the fiscal year 2009 budget at the end of that year, $263 million of that $300 million will have been repaid, and everybody's being told about that. But no one's being told about the fact that as fast as we're putting it in, we're taking it right back out. In fact, in fiscal year 2009, we're taking another $121 million out of the Senior Living Trust Fund to pay for Medicaid-related costs. So when you look at the balance, that's the real key. At the end of fiscal year 2009, there will only be $37 million left in that fund. In other words, about 14% of what we repaid to it. So the key is, as fast as we're putting it in, we're taking it out. I relate it to saying I'd love to have a revolving line of credit with my bank like this. In other words, if you borrow it and you repay it once, you're done. You can withdraw it again and you don't have to repay. I don't think we'll find a revolving line of credit with any bank that I'm aware of that will do that. So the thing that I'm most worried about this concept is when we only tell the taxpayers about the positive side. That's what creates a great deal of lack of trust in government. When we don't tell them the whole story, all the facts they need in order to evaluate what's really happening to the Senior Living Trust Fund. Slide 10 just shows you our new charge card. Obviously, because we're depleting the tobacco settlement-related funds, we're depleting the Senior Living Trust Fund, now we're attacking the RIF Fund. That is our new charge card, the Rebuild Iowa Infrastructure Fund. What you'll find is, in that legislation, notwithstanding, in other words, the word we use to say, even the law says this, I'm not going to follow it, was used 32 times. And we're actually appropriating over $100 million for fiscal year 2009 general fund services, and have even tapped into $91 million, saying we're going to use that in fiscal year 2010. What does that mean? It means we're taking money away from infrastructure at a time when we're proposing close to $300 million worth of corrections infrastructure. Does not seem to be the time that we should actually be diverting those monies over to general fund services. What's the impact? Because of that, we're actually going to borrow to pay for the corrections infrastructure needs. In fact, we're proposing to borrow about $300 million worth to cover that corrections infrastructure. What it does is it begs the question, you know, once you look at what happened to the tobacco securitization monies, once you look at what happened to Senior Living Trust Fund, now what you see happening with RIP, it's not a real stretch to say what might happen with those statewide sales tax proceeds. What's the next fund that we're going to tap in order to cover our spending habits? And then slide 11 just brings us back to what I say. If you step back and take a look at this budget, I think the question it really begs to me is, in a time of economic uncertainty, isn't this a time to be fiscally conservative? And if you take a look at what even the executive director of the National Governors Association said recently, he said, if the current downturn follows the path of previous recessions, 35 to 40 states could face budget cuts in 2009. That's largely because of a lag before economic effects show up in the state's revenues. I mean, so economists out there are talking about what's going to happen with a recession. Even the experts in the government arena are saying the same thing. And what are we doing? We seem to, I guess, think we're going to be one of those lucky 10 to 15 states that won't have to cut expenditures, because contrary to what the experts are saying, we notwithstood using the actual December 2007 revenue estimating conference, revenue estimate provided us another $49 million, so we increased spending rather than reduced spending because of that. We have this built-in spending gap of $569 million for fiscal year 2010 that creates some real significant challenges as we go forward. And there's a lot of talk about the fact that we have the largest amount we've ever had in the rainy day funds, which is true, about $620 million. But when you take a look at the significant spending gap that we've already built into fiscal year 2010, just a small recession, we could easily wipe out those funds if we really tried to pay for everything from our general fund revenue stream. So some real challenges going forward. With that, I'll turn it over to questions that you might have.
On the RIF fund, the approximately $100 million, can you give us an idea of what kind of general fund expenditures are being used for the State Patrol fuel? Or, I mean, can you tell us?
Yeah. One of the largest ones was $50 million for the Gore Iowa Values Funds that's previously been funded out of the general fund appropriations. That's one that stands out to me as being the largest.
In your presentation, you criticize the prison bonding fund and the statewide sales tax for schools. Couldn't the argument be made that that's also trying to bring revenues in line with spending priorities on those two?
Yeah, the real key is what we're trying to do is to say, how do we make sure ongoing revenues match up with ongoing expenses? And what we keep doing is using one-time or limited-time revenues to cover those ongoing. So, yes, you can use some of those allocations, but the key is you're going to have to divert them permanently, or if they're a short-term revenue stream like Senior Living Trust Fund, what do you do when they run out? And that's what I'm really looking for, is to say you control both sides of the equation. And what I'm asking you to do is to say, if you can justify this level of spending, then you better justify this level of ongoing revenue to match the two, so you match the two up. Otherwise, what we continue to do is take short-term measures and kick the can down the road, which just makes that spending gap get bigger as we go down the road. It's going to be more difficult to get that filled.
Is that a good way to delay raising taxes, though, if you use some one-time money, some reserves, or other funds that you have?
It can be if you have truly one-time reserves and monies that you don't have any other purpose for. You take a look at infrastructure. I mean, what we're saying is we have huge infrastructure needs, not only buildings and so forth with the corrections, but also roads and bridges. So to the extent that we're going to use those and divert those over to general fund services, that means we have to bond. And whenever you bond, you're committing another revenue source to pay back for those bonds. So it's not like you just get that money up front and everybody's happy. You've got to commit a future revenue stream to actually pay those back. So the key is if you find resources and you have those that you are available to take, you want to make sure, though, you don't just do Band-Aid approaches like we're doing, because we keep covering one year's expenses, but we don't worry about what's going to happen the following year when we don't have that ongoing revenue stream. And that's the real key.
Do I understand correctly, $366 million spending gap in the current budget year?
Yes.
Is that made up through supplemental appropriations then when they come back? How does that
work? What they actually do is those are the costs that we slide to other funds and special accounts, like the Senior Living Trust Fund, so they're actually being paid for by one-time revenue sources.
Okay. So real key that you get. That is the $101 million.
Yes.
You mentioned roads and bridges. Are you suggesting that some road use tax fund money has been shifted to general fund?
No, just concerned about infrastructure in general. We're also obviously looking at how else do we raise revenues to cover our infrastructure for roads and bridges. So not only are we going to be dealing with how do I raise revenues and fees to cover my general fund spending, but also infrastructure spending that's going to be coming up. So that gets you a double whammy on the tax and fee side.
What is the senior living trust fund supposed to be used for, and isn't when you spend it on Medicaid, aren't you helping seniors who are indigent?
You can be doing some help, but the real key behind the senior living trust fund was to provide services to seniors at home so that they could stay at home longer and avoid going to institutional care, which is obviously a more cost-effective way to provide those services. But the key has been we took it to pay for Medicaid costs, obviously. We must have made the decision also when seniors started to complain that that's not really helping seniors with special programs like we had intended. That's why we agreed to repay it. The key is if you're going to repay it, but you don't leave it there for those services or spend it for those services, you really haven't accomplished anything.
So have you determined how much or what percentage of the senior living trust fund has been used for services for at-home?
Very small. In fact, most of these costs have been to pay for Medicaid-related costs. That's been the primary source. To cover our Medicaid shortfall.
Wasn't part of the senior living trust fund also to be used to convert nursing homes
yes.
to assisted living?
Yes.
A
little bit of that has been done. I couldn't tell you how much, but I know some of it has been done. But the vast majority has gone to supplement Medicaid.
So if they had never dipped into it, how much would be in it?
There's actually been nearly $600 million worth of federal dollars that were received, and on top of that, we would have had interest earnings and so forth. So it would
have been $1 billion.
Could have been very high. It would have been somewhere in excess of $600 million for sure.
And the goal is obviously to live off the interest of that.
Yeah, and that was part of it, but it could also have been used to provide services. But the key is even if you're going to build programs for seniors, and that's a limited time funding source, you better make sure that if you're going to continue those services, how are you going to fund them in the future? So that's always the key. Whenever you provide a new program, there's limited time resources. You got to make sure that you have an idea of where you're headed with replacing that funding stream when it disappears.
And that was created during the Branstad administration.
Yes. Yeah, it was back in, I don't remember which year it was,
okay.
But I think it was like early 2000 or late 99.
That would be Bill Sack.
Yeah. Was it a Bill Sack? I couldn't tell you for sure. I know it's been around at least since 2001.
Is there any good news out of this budget?
I think the good news is that spending only increased 4.7% this year, which was absolutely required because we had 9.6% increase in spending last year. So even when you add the two together, almost 15%, it's still a huge spending increase in a two-year period. That's the bright spot of it. I would say that compared to the governor's proposal, the positive with this particular budget is that we did not borrow to pay for general fund services. The governor had proposed to borrow about $67 million and pay for general fund services fiscal year 09, which is a procedure we should never use, and the legislature and the adopted budget does not use that technique, so I was glad to see that.
What was that for?
It was really just one way to balance the budget. So what we were doing was taking the tobacco securitization monies that we're going to get. We made part of them tax exempt, which means you have to use them for capital. The governor had proposed making some of them taxable so that he could use them for current services. And the legislature is making them all tax exempt, so they'll all be capital related.
You mentioned that seniors were listening to what you said earlier about that. Are you beginning to see signs that constant briefings that you've been giving us starting to have some effect? Lawmakers referring to that sort of thing.
Yeah, I really do. I mean, I think the education process is making a huge difference. In fact, I have a group that visits me each year and gets kind of an annual update. And the last time the group was in, one of the ladies said, you know, I was just talking with my elected official today, and I told him I was tired of using charge cards to balance our budget. And the elected official said, oh, you've been talking to auditor about. So the message is getting there, and I do see lots of people that call me and say, I have been communicating with my elected officials. I've been telling them that I understand what's taking place. And that's been my real key mission, is to say, how do I take these complex financial information and put it in terms that the citizens can understand? And if they can understand, they can get involved. And if they get involved, they can have an impact. And we're seeing that.
Have you criticized these shifts in past years, particularly when Republicans were in majority?
Yes. Ever since I've gotten here, when they started them, and I look back at what started in fiscal year 2001, it's one of those things that if you do an expenditure shift, you got to have a long-term plan of how you're going to bring it back into your general fund budget. And we're not doing that. Instead, what we're doing is continuing to shift and making the shifts even larger. We're just not making any progress. And that's what I'm looking for. We're not going to turn this ship around in 1 year. And I'm not asking them to. I'm not expecting miracles. But I am looking for progress. I'm not seeing the progress. I mean, when you look at that spending gap, when you look at record level expenditure shifts, it's hard to argue any progress is being made. And that tells you that should we hit economic times that either slow the revenue growth, flatten the revenue growth, or worse yet, reduce revenues, we're going to have even more significant challenges to face because our ongoing programs are still going to be there demanding those dollars. And we're not going to have the revenues to support them because we don't have them today either.
I can imagine that some of our Democratic leaders could say that this might be politically motivated. Can you respond beforehand?
Sure. I would say take a look at what I said about the Republican legislature's proposals. Same thing. Doing the very same tactics, variation in the numbers, but the tactics are the same, and I will continue to criticize them. And what I look at is to say there's no such thing as Republican numbers or Democrat numbers. They're the numbers, and what we're trying to do is say what's best for Iowa, how do we get there, and how do we start making some progress and some improvements so that Iowa returns to better financial condition and that we're better prepared for the future.
How vulnerable is the state to an economic downturn? How long can the state's reserves sustain?
Yeah, I mean, if you take a look at that spending gap, and we said we weren't going to shift any of our costs to other funds and special accounts, we'd wipe it out in 1 year. That's a very, very scary situation when you say you have $600 million worth of rainy day funds, but yet when you take a look at what we're paying for, it's not a general fund revenue, it's really scary. So the key is we're very, very vulnerable to what the economy might do to us, and we don't know how long it might be, how deep it might be, but yet we're not preparing, especially when you sit there and say we needed another $50 million to spend, so we took the April revenue estimating conference number instead of the December number. I mean, that's a time to be conservative. Why didn't you stick with the December number and modify your expenditures rather than modify your revenue so you could justify more spending?
Thank you.